How's it? Good morning. Otherwise, you well? It's so funny. I went to lunch yesterday with James and Janine, and we were talking about how, like, South Africans, that's a totally unique, not just South African, but very Joburg thing, that otherwise you well.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You tell straight away if someone's from, like, Joburg, otherwise you well. Okay, yeah, great, thanks. How are you, Ass?
The fine, how are you?
Fine, are you? You good?
Yeah, all good.
Excellent.
Preparing for the snow on Monday. Apparently we're having snow in Gauteng.
Wow. Okay, now you've got a different weather report to me, but I did see it was going to be really cold, like 4-degree minimums, but, you know, there's always that one mean, cold, nasty snap right at the end of winter. And if this is the last one, hey, that's not bad. I don't mind it. August usually has one of those. And isn't it always like the strange phenomenon, and maybe it's not so strange if you are a weather expert, but isn't it usually in August or September that on the rare occasion we have snow?
I've been told by people who have time to invest their time in the weather that snow has been forecast for Gauteng on Monday.
I'll take your word for it. You're the boss of this. I'm not going to argue. I'm not arguing. I'm not arguing with you.
I'm not owning it.
You know, you remember, like, every time I'd do something like that, Thabo Modisane, the executive producer, would say, "Don't fight with me. I'm not fighting with you." So that's where that comes from. All right. So it's, 7th of August already. We're into the final stretch, the end of the year. There's this awesome app I found the other day called Left, L-E-F-T. And it's not for like left-handed people or anything. It's a calendar that tells you how many days you have left of the year, how many months there are until the next lunar eclipse or whatever it is. It gives you, you can create as many calendars as you want. And on the premium edition, you can even put in your own stuff. Like, let's say you've got a project that you're doing and you have a certain deadline, it works it back for you. So it's very cool. And it just shows it with little dots. Let me see if I can find it here for you quickly. So it's a gimmicky thing. There, for example, there's how many days are left of the year in the white dots.
Okay. So it gives you a nice visual representation if you're more into visual than numbers.
Yeah, it's cool. And you can change the way it looks and, you know, the colors. And I mean, it's quite a useful calendar app. And there's so many gimmicky things out there that when I do find one that's cool, I like to tell people about it.
Could maybe put in your imaginary death date, like when you think you might die, and then that might motivate you to do more things with your life.
What a lovely, optimistic thing to think about this morning. that's why the people love you, you know, making them feel great.
Listen, I went for a mammogram the day before yesterday.
Yeah. Are you in the clear?
I'm feeling pretty positive about life after that. She said they were the most beautiful breasts. Obviously, she's referring to the inside, that she'd seen in a long time. She said there's absolutely nothing to worry about. They're all very clear. Your glands are clear. So I left with a hop and a skip and a jump in my step.
Well, I mean, don't you remember we used to have songs about them on the show? People would write songs. We had, you know, accomplished South African musicians composing songs about your breasts. What a surprise, not for me, not for the audience. Clearly for you, you weren't listening. We told you this.
No, but you know what? There is good on the inside, so that's all I'm happy about. You always go to these things and you think, oh, my gosh, I'm going I've come for a routine checkup, and now I'm going to get the news. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it doesn't always have to be like that, and it's good to just have it done.
Great titty Friday. This is going to be known for all time. The 7th of August 2026 will be known as Great Titty Friday. Yeah, it's such
okay,
a...
Okay, now you?
Now me. I'm good. I have nothing to complain about. I've had like a really, really busy and thoroughly interesting couple of weeks. I've been going to, you know, have lunches and coffees and meet people who, because I got a little bit of time on my hands at the moment, especially, you know, in the mornings I do a lot of the stuff that I have to do in the afternoon. So I'm up early, and then if I get all my emails and shit done, then I sort of have an hour or two to spare most days. So what I'm doing now is I'm actually filling it up by seeing people I want to see and who make me think and widen my understanding and broaden my horizons and all that shit. And I've seen some amazing people in the last while. I went to visit a guy a couple of days ago called General Chris Gildenhuys. He used to be in charge of the armored division in our South African army up to about 10 years ago. So he was there for the transition in 1994. He was there before that. He enlisted as a soldier, became, you know, I think he was a brigadier general when he retired. And he now is in charge of a company that makes military vehicles. And what an interesting, like, niche area of South African engineering. In fact, it was so ironic that the very week that I went to see him was the week that one of the ministers, might even have been Banyaza Lesufi, or a government official of some kind, said, you know, South Africa has this incredible know-how when it comes to the kind of military equipment we can build, and particularly these sorts of military road vehicles. So they almost like, I'm sure you've seen on TV and in movies, you would have seen those massive trucks that are mine-proof, that have UN on them. They're the white ones. Or those vehicles increasingly that you see the Saudis using in their military parades and all the rest of it. I mean, these guys make, here in Pretoria, they make these unbelievable, like solid, you know, the steel is 16 millimeters thick. And they can, a mine can go off under them and they'll be fine. The people inside will be okay. You know, they build the whole capsule. And this guy's, you know, in his retired life, he's running this company. We've got such clever people in South Africa. You just have to look for them.
Were you able to see those?
Yeah.
Or did you just chat to him?
Oh, I went so far as to ask him, is it possible for a private citizen to own these? And he said, no.
Oh.
Yeah. No, you're not. Because
I was going to say, because you could put one of those in your garden, and if anything ever happened, get inside and just carry on doing what you're doing on your laptop or whatever.
Yeah, correct. I mean, you wouldn't have signal if they let a nuke off somewhere. But I mean, you know, it's so interesting that they build these things and the specifications are hugely regulated, and obviously because they're military and armored vehicles, they're special licenses required. They make most of the stuff here in South Africa, which is unbelievable. And when you buy one as an overseas government or as a foreign state that can legally acquire these, then they send you a huge kit with spare parts as well. And you think to yourself, well, why do we get that with our cars? You know, we should petition the car companies that when you buy your car, they give you a whole bunch of spares, like extra windscreen wipers, bulbs for your headlights. You know, maybe a spare tire if they're really feeling generous, because these guys think so far ahead that obviously these vehicles are used in dangerous and difficult situations, so they'll need the spare parts. They can't wait for a month for them to arrive from South Africa. So they supply them with the car, with the vehicle.
And they're built sustainably using canvas Woolworths bags, aren't they?
Yeah, sure, because those will protect you. I went to the shops yesterday and I was doing some normal boring grocery shopping, and there were police and emergency services people and everything else in the store. I thought, what the hell's going on? So, you know, you're nosy, but you don't want to bother people who are busy. So when I eventually got to the till, I said to the the cashier. I said, well, what the hell's going on here? And she looked at me and she went, I don't know either. And she said, I think it's some kind of inspection. Turns out that the police and, I mean, there were like 15 people there. It was crazy. It was totally unnecessary. And they go and they inspect the meat and the fridges and they check for health concerns. I mean, it's, I know that it's probably good that it's going on, right? But I could think of better uses for the police's time. I mean, there were four police officers among these 12 or 15 people. There was a fire services guy. I suppose he has to check that the fire hydrants all work. And, you know, so at least when I see those things, as much as you want to complain, I mean, every time I see the police, I go, oh, God, what are they up to? But I suppose it's good that they're checking that stuff, right? I mean, even if it's just the appearance of it, it keeps everybody from slacking. I walked out of there with mixed feelings.
It feels like it's an activity that could have been done outside of shopping hours. But anyway.
Yeah. 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 I mean, something like that. there are a few companies here in Pretoria that make amazing vehicles, says Barely Vocal Radio. Especially that one with the massive wheels that can turn on the spot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I also saw Dr. Jonathan Witt last week. I met with these guys who have just bought the Financial Mail. They supply incredible equipment to the mines all over South Africa and the rest of the continent. And they're just incredibly smart, thoughtful, brilliant people running around. Unfortunately, as is the case all over the world, the stuff that gets in the news is usually about the disappointing people. It's not about the guys who build these military vehicles in Pretoria or the company that just acquired the Financial Mail or, you know, the genius people who are contributing every day to the economy. That's why I do this. You've got to keep reminding yourself of how much good is going on in South Africa because there's a ton of it. It really is happening, whether we are aware of it or not. And these guys just keep going on. They don't let it get them down. That, you know, that everybody's talking about like corruption and the Madlanga Commission and all that kind of thing. They're busy doing their thing, man.
Yeah, I suppose it's more about what affects your daily life, but it's just the way things work. You kind of get one good news story out of 20.
Slippery Pickle says, come on, Gareth, a VW Polo is about 6 million rands worth of spare parts driving around. If they give those out when you buy the car, how are the manufacturers going to make real money? Yeah, everybody's talking about these Chinese cars at the moment, and this wasn't going to be a subject for this morning. But I'm increasingly seeing them all over the roads. I don't know if you are. And I think they're all made in the same factory. I think they're all the same. They just changed some of the outside appearances, you know.
If they're from China, they'll certainly be made in the same region.
By the same children.
By the same family of children.
Yeah. Come on, kids. We've got to get these. There are 300 South Africans who've ordered cars in the last month. You better work all night. Okay, we work very hard. Yeah. Otherwise, you won't get your, I don't know, handful of porridge tomorrow.
Aren't they just more affordable?
Yeah. A friend of mine disparagingly called his Chinese car an MP3 player on wheels, which is hilarious. I got to tell you, like I bought one in January or February, so I'm not in any position to criticize anybody else who does. And the thing that got me was the price. But I got to tell you, I'm a little disappointed by the supposedly superior Chinese electronics. I thought the one thing I wouldn't have to worry about was, you know, like your phone connecting to the car's system, the sound system, the screen and all that stuff. Like every one in three times it just automatically connects when you get in the car. The other two times I have to press, and the screen has these tiny little buttons on it that you, You have to have that the daintiest little touch to like what's obviously
the fingers of a child.
That like a child has made it. Like a child would press it. That's why, and the thing doesn't always connect, and it's infuriating. I'm like, come on, this is the one thing China's like good at. Don't you guys make our iPhones? Fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Okay, so Ted says that's his name. That's more an Apple problem than a Chinese car problem. Well, same factory, dude. Like, come on.
Maybe there is a delay. Infused with the Apple family.
Maybe they're all. I mean, Tim Cook did say a while ago, and I think he's still in charge at Apple for a little bit longer. He said they are going to move some of the manufacturing back to America. Well, I don't see little American children working in factories. They're not disciplined enough. Sean says, this is interesting. I was involved in the Biak factory. That's one of the brands, believe it or not. It comes here pre-assembled. I just final assembly in the factory. Those things are not built for SA roads. It falls apart. Don't buy. I love it. Someone who's worked in the factory is like, don't buy that shit. Look, I wouldn't take it off road, hey? I certainly don't think it's like a 4x4 in any shape, way, or form. And it doesn't matter which one of them you're driving, for those who are interested in, like, you know, what model, what kind. I think it's kind of, again, the parts are probably interchangeable. So, S, I've got something to show you which I thought was very, very funny. And we'll just start off with this. We've got a lot of stuff to get to today. We've got Roger Rax making a return from the South. He's coming back on the show today, which is fantastic. I'm very excited to have Roger back. We're going to talk about he might have spotted aliens, and he thinks there's an alien sighting. Yeah, he said there's an alien sighting in, of all places, Four Ways.
What is he doing so far north?
No. He knows people. He knows people who know people who know people. Come on. So there could be aliens in Four Ways. And it's Women's Day this weekend, don't forget. Sunday is Women's Day, the 9th. Which means you get Monday off, so it's actually a long weekend. So happy Women's Day, Leanne.
I mean, haven't we given enough? Now we give you a free Monday. My goodness.
Yeah.
So enjoy your Women's Day on Monday, Gareth.
Thanks. I'm so glad that you thought of me on Women's Day. That's the whole point. Yeah, you know, I think we should celebrate Women's Day with this clip. Just take a look at this. This should make your morning start off in the right way.
Thank you, darling. It's beautiful.
Good.
Is the other one for me too?
No, that's for my mistress.
Mistress?
Mm-hmm.
You have a mistress?
Mm-hmm.
You never told me.
It's not important.
I didn't know you had a mistress.
Oh, I see her only, what, every 2 weeks? You know, it's not important. It's only for sex. Just for sex.
Well, who is she? Anyone I know?
She's a showgirl. Morris has one, too.
Your business partner has a mistress?
Mm-hmm. They're in the same show, Pasta Soap.
Can I see her?
Of course, if you're interested. Why not?
Which one is she?
Who?
Your mistress.
The brunette, third from the left.
And which is Morris's?
The blonde, the end.
Ours is better.
I love it. Isn't
that
great?
Women as temperate as her you would find in the world, but yeah.
My favorite thing is that she says no, she prefers their mistress. Ours is better. How great. All right, so what exciting things do you have to tell us this morning? What important information are you going to imbue our busy, clever brains with? What have you got?
Well, speaking of machines that make things, yes. I was interested to see that there is a, you know, we're all printing, 3D printing stuff at home.
Are you? Do you have a 3D printer?
I don't have a 3D printer, but I know many people who do, and yep. they make really useful things. But now there's something, and I think this is something you might be interested in, Gareth, something called a CNC machine, which is coming into the home. Apparently the next big craze of 2027. A CNC machine is a 3D sculpting machine, rather. So instead Shit. Of putting plastic in and then it creates something out of the right. plastic, you put in a full block of brass, a full block wow. of jade.
Oh, wow. And it can like cut away the pieces you don't need. It'll do a Michelangelo.
Steel. Yes. Look, Picasso.
I mean,
I like.
There's that famous quote about how, you know, someone asked Michelangelo, how did you sculpt the David, for example, that famous statue that's in Milan, right? Which everybody in the yeah. world has seen, even if it's on a photograph. And someone said, how did you do this? This is incredible. Or the Pietà, which is in the Vatican, the famous statue of Mary holding Jesus, you know, after they've pulled him down from the cross. Beautiful works. And Michelangelo said at one of these occasions, I didn't sculpt this myself. It was already inside the marble. I just freed it. So that's what these mm-hmm. machines will do.
That's exactly what they do. So CNC wow. doesn't sound like anything that it is, computer numerical control machine. Yeah. But being a bit of a side hustle from people that they can have in their workshop or their garage, they're motorized. And then they cough out physical parts and digital CAD or CAD designs out of solid blocks of material. So you put in your block of plastic, your block of copper, oh, your block of metal, wood, and make, oh. and okay, that's like a huge guy that'll be in a factory. These are the same size as 3D printers. And you can print like little statuettes or whatever you want, parts like gears for a bicycle, anything you like.
Well,
using laser cutters.
I have to tell you, my nephews who are 10 and 12 at their school, they have 3D printers in their one lab and this is primary school, by the way. And they're already printing stuff in the 3D printer. It's phenomenal what they can do. It's like part of their curriculum now that they learn to do.
Yeah.
3D printing, and a lot of people have 3D printers in their homes, and they make machine parts. You can do almost anything because you, as long as you use the right substances, and obviously some of these printers are more expensive than others, but you can make things out of, you know, very hard synthetic materials. It can be soft plastics. You can print like a foam. You can make storage cases for things. I mean, the uses of this are endless. I think if I had to get one, you wouldn't see me for like 2 years. I'd be making stupid shit on my 3D printer like a turbo nerd for hours. I'd burn through so much material. Can you imagine me?
I can imagine. Wow. You would be putting blocks of hardwood in there and epoxy and jewelry wax and titanium. To give you an idea of price.
Mm-hmm. What do they cost?
So you might get something called a Makera Z1. And obviously they'll reduce in price as they get better. But at the moment they're on the market for about $1,100.
Okay. I mean, you know, when I have lots of cash lying around, whenever that happens. When that happens, of course, yeah.
You're going to make tiny little statues of liberty out of copper.
I was one of those kids who used to make those things out of like mud in the garden. I loved it. And plasticine, you remember that when you were a kid?
Yeah.
So I've always marveled more at sculpture, and I love paintings, and I love I love crafts of, you know, jewelry, the ability to make beautiful furniture, but I think sculpture is a whole higher level, because it's you're working in three dimensions, and you can't really, if you take off too much, if you're sculpting, it's impossible to fix it. Now, I wonder if this is going to remove the need for that skill. I mean, it's always going to be the case that something made by human hands is rarer and more valuable. But I do like the fact that if you want to manufacture something, you could give someone a sculpture of themselves for their birthday. I mean, that you know, that could be cool.
Yeah, you could make little jewelry charms and amulets and sure. Definitely side hustle vibes.
Yeah, gifting. You could sell this stuff. You could be commissioned to do this stuff for people, just like an artist would have been. But the difference is here, you could churn out like three or four of these in a day if you're smart about it.
Mm-hmm.
I love
Very
it.
Very cool.
My father-in-law, says Henny, has three of these 3D printers, and it drives my wife crazy. Oh, man. There are clearly some people in the audience who are already doing this stuff. Barely Vocal Radio says, I'm using a Seeger Formlabs for 3D printing. Flux Engraver with built-in camera makes life so much easier. Wow. I got into turning 2D pictures into 3D models a while ago, and it's amazing what those can do. I mean, the level of detail is not so great yet that you can, you know, can replicate something phenomenally intricate, but it's coming. Yeah. It's not far off.
What I hope you'd do it.
What would you do with it?
I would probably make like little charms and things, but yeah, I'm not really that type of person. I'd rather buy from someone who's doing it. But I hope that it comes with some kind of, you know, extra knowledge attached to it. So it'll help people understand things like how 3D animation works, because that's just fascinating. And not just, you know, oh, let me put this in and make.
Well, I think the big,
you know, I hope it comes with some
problem.
Education.
The big problem that so many people have, and I think it's just one of those things that certain people are just born with the visual and brain skills to be able to see things in 3D, right? And I hope I'm one of those people, because that's one of the reasons I love drawing floor plans and designing buildings, and I should have probably done something about that when I was at varsity, but it's just a hobby for me, and I absolutely love it. It is engrossing. And I close my eyes when I go to sleep, and I imagine these buildings and these rooms that I've drawn. But I use 3D software now, which does a lot of that for me. It makes it easier for you. But these days, the estate agents, those irritating ones that we always play embarrassing videos of, I don't think those are the ones who are doing the 3D stuff. But most of the really good estate agents can show you, especially if they're selling stuff off spec, right? They can show you like a walkthrough of the place in 3D of what it looks like, because people can't imagine this stuff. They can't look at a floor plan and go, okay, that's where the window is, that's where the door is, that's how big the room will feel, that's how high the ceilings are. So this stuff will help enormously. I mean, you imagine what this will do for the kinds of projects that architects have to do. Architects used to have to, if they did a massive model of a building that they were designing, they'd have to make the things out of like wood and sticks, and they'd have to get moss for grass and that sort of shit. Now you can print all that stuff, right?
Yeah. Amazing. It's kind of reminds me, my brother's just bought a house that he's renovating. And I mean, compared to 3 years ago when he renovated, with the advent of AI, how different things are. Taking pictures of the entire house from top to bottom and reimagining everything through AI. No more difficult decisions on should the garage door be painted gray or white. You can just visualize it in, you know, right in front of you. It's just amazing. I love it so much.
Yeah, I love this. Goon says it's great for merch. So one of the ideas for merch that I had this week, and we do have a merch section on the new GarethCliff.com. All of this is just waiting to be launched. We're getting our subscriptions ready for the daily briefing, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to update you until I can, until there's something that you can go and look at. But we're going to have a merch section, and I thought this week, what about T-shirts with a famous line now, which I've used. I used it in this week's daily briefings. Why you never give me, which is the central philosophy of the ANC.
Right? Wasn't that a security guard that you came across?
But I think that is the dominant philosophy. Like, you know, you think about the philosophy of Aristotle or Socrates or Immanuel Kant or Nietzsche or Freud. The central philosophy of the ANC is why you never give me. And I think shirts like that would sell like hotcakes. People would love them in ANC colors.
Did you see the video that Helen Ziller put out? Obviously, she puts these out, and sometimes they're a bit of banter at the water cooler. She was on the one side of the road under her DA umbrellas, and they were campaigning, and across the road were the ANC. Did you see that one?
Yeah. And then she went over and spoke to the ANC woman and convinced her.
No, it's one where there's an old Madala in an ANC t-shirt. Yeah. And obviously he doesn't understand that he's being recorded and the power of social media. But he's just standing there like this to Helen.
Oh, yeah. And then now she's put him in the background of a whole lot of her stuff, right? Yeah. I love that.
Like, water pipe's not working. There's the ANC guy pulling a zap.
His friend is trying to
cover him up and stop him from.
Yeah.
Probably knew the implications. But yeah, I thought that was a good one.
Whoever is doing Helen's Helen, you hear when I said her name, my voice went to her. So, whoever's doing Helen's social media is fantastic.
Yeah, they are. I think she has a lot to do with it. She can be quite a fun person. We know that.
Yeah, there we go. Bitcoin Butt says he's actually now known as the Middle Finger Madala.
There you go.
I think James has actually got that clip for us. We'll get to it just now. But yeah, this is now famous stuff. Isn't it amazing how politics has changed? Because you can ruin someone's political career with a meme. Nobody even knew what a meme was 5 and 10 years ago they did. But let's say 20 years ago, nobody knew. It wasn't a word that was bandied around like it is now. And the power of this to ridicule stupid things in society, to make fun of things in a good-natured way too, it's amazing that the meme has become as powerful as it is. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, well, it can change people's trajectories in their lives. There are these clips that you find where they've done stories on children who were memes 15 years ago and how they're still recognized for it in some either good way or bad way. There's that old guy as well who appears in, he was like a stock photo.
Yeah.
And he appears in so many memes.
I follow him on Instagram. He's like a Scandinavian of some kind. And he's always used as the general picture. He's like smiling and then they put whatever shit in front of him and it's the same picture. That's the guy you're talking about. But I thought about Hawk Tour Girl for some reason the other day. Remember what a big deal she was? And I think she made a ton of money and then it all just, you know, ran out very quickly. Because again, you know, you got your 15 minutes of fame. This is why I wonder if we've got a realistic view of kind of how human attention has, the attention span has shortened so much now. That in order to have a sustained career, if your career is dependent on attention, like let's say you're just a YouTuber or you do something more difficult. Let's say you do, you know, complex stuff in the world of investigative journalism, for example, or you're a person who is putting documentaries together and you develop a reputation for that. It is so much harder to keep the attention now than it's ever been because we've got so many options. You could wake up in the morning and go down a rabbit hole of content. And, you know, by the night, you could be interested in three things that you didn't even know existed the day before.
Yeah.
Pretty bizarre. Okay. I also have to tell you, because this is very much up your street, there's an Australian library, those are still a thing, that received a return that had been missing for 150 years. Someone checked out a book 150 years ago. It was discovered bricked into the fireplace of a home during renovations. Can you imagine what that library thought when this – and first of all, kudos to the people who brought it back, right?
Yeah, because they could have faced a fine, technically.
Well, they probably – yeah, I think they would have let them go on the fine. It's probably not them who checked it out. But 150 years later, I mean, there are some librarians sitting in dusty old libraries who may be 150, but chances are slim.
That's hilarious. I love that. I meant to say while we were on the Helen Ziller thing, I did receive one of these badly made AI posters of Helen Ziller. And it's about her making an appearance in my suburb.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is it's, you know, recently we sold my parents' home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there. It's in my garden.
Are you joking? So Helen Ziller's going to make an appearance in your garden?
It's so weird. I mean, sitting in that garden for 20 years, the garden. I don't think my dad would have been that pleased, but he certainly would have found it entertaining.
Hey, she could be mayor of Joburg. And I think there are loads of people who hope that happens. I'm not impressed with a lot of the stuff that our politicians do, whether it's the DAANC or EFF, MK, whatever. But as a human, I'm still just dumbstruck. We're trying to line up an interview with Helen where I'll go and interview her somewhere, because there's so many places that she could suggest that would be interesting, you know, top of a building or whatever. And I want to talk to her because I still don't understand why anybody, let alone someone of her age who's already done, you know, I mean, Helen's been around a long time. She's been part of some incredible history in this country. She used to be a journalist. She was there in the Biko case, for heaven's sake, all those years ago. And she's done her bit for South Africa. And there's something that intrigues me about people who have the sense of duty that she does, because no one wants to be – you don't want that job, right? It's got to be the worst job in the world. There are only a few things I can think of that would be worse than that. Trying to fix Joburg, such a mammoth task, and there's no glory associated with it. It's all just different layers of shit. And she wants to do it. She's at her age, got more energy than many people half that age have for their jobs that they like, that they enjoy. It's just phenomenal. I've got to get into her head and find out what that driving force is. It fascinates me.
To carry that amount of passion at her stage of life, but I do remember when she said the women in her family are bred differently. They just, you know, go on and on and on, and they have a lot of stamina. But that literally is the age where you're asking, what time is retirement? You know, you've just had enough. You don't care anymore. And you've given everything. But she just keeps on going. It's amazing.
So Bitcoin Butt asks, when is Helen coming back on this show, or is the show non-political? No, we still cover politics every now and then, but the show is mostly an entertainment show. You guys know that. And I want to keep it fun and light, and we try to bring interesting people on. Leanne, we had a star appearance from your friend Professor David Block the other day, who was terrific.
Right, lovely.
Yeah. And, you know, we try to bring on like people who are doing cool stuff. And there are so many. So that's also one of the reasons that I'm in my little bits of spare time going to meet and see interesting people, because then we can get them on the show and I can share what they know with you. It's fantastic. Or you could be like Professor Jason R. Day and lie your way to the top. Whoops. Do you know this story? Can I tell you about this?
I don't know about this.
So there's been an embarrassing thing that happened this week. The youngest, I think he's the youngest professor, or he's the youngest black professor in Cambridge University history, a guy called Professor Jason R. Day. He was celebrated in the university for, you know, some of the work that he'd done and his own personal story, which he said he'd run six marathons in 6 days or whatever. And there was this whole story of like a tough upbringing and how he made it. And he's written these amazing academic works in serious academic journals. And, you know, he's qualified, got so many degrees. Turns out he was a complete fraud. And the left-wing liberals at Cambridge University were just hoodwinked by this guy. Turns out he was a total midwit, didn't have a lot to offer. Most of his stuff was plagiarized, but blatantly plagiarized. Really? Yeah, he was just a fraud. He was a total lying, deceiving, bullshit artist, con man of the first order. And it's hugely embarrassing for a university like Cambridge because they were proudly trumpeting. There he is. They're proudly trumpeting. I mean, oh, wow. I would have been able to tell you that that guy with that look, with that long fucking hair and the makeup and the, you know, I could have told you guys. Professor of bullshit. Anyway, but, okay, I suppose. So, yeah, he's become another embarrassing poster boy for the failure of DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, because there's such a desire among white liberals to, you know, they want to be part of a story that makes all the other people who've been previously disadvantaged and disenfranchised feel special. And they can't wait to push these people and advance them, even if they haven't checked whether the people are legit. And then when it happens, it's so embarrassing, not just for the white liberals who are all let down, but for the people who thought that this was a major advance, that there was someone who was, from a minority group that was underrepresented in academia. What they do is they do more damage than if you'd never seen a young black professor with the long hair and all that stuff in the first place. They've set it back. They have not done it any favors. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. They must have. Stupid. I wonder what was in it for him, because it's sometimes money, sometimes a position, sometimes.
Well, he had a tenured teacher. Position at the university. And it's partly the amount of attention that he got. There are people who get addicted to attention. We were talking about earlier how, you know, you have these people who make it for 15 minutes of fame and then they get addicted to that and they keep chasing it. One of the people I think that's happening to at the moment in South Africa is that Anton Taylor guy who, you know, he did a couple of funny things online and he's got a following and he deserves it. He's earned it. He's done some funny stuff. And now he's getting involved in, you know, gay pride flags being flown at high schools in Cape Town. And people are like, dude, this is not what you should be doing. This is not what you're known for. And nobody's backing you on this. And he's putting his heart and soul. He's like selling the stock of that stuff. And people are not buying it. I think his time in the sun is coming to an end. But who knows? I mean, maybe I'm wrong. People have a weird way of coming back. But fame is such a dumb thing to chase.
You know, speaking of which, I don't know if you've seen in the news this week, Perez Hilton.
So Perez Hilton was one of those celebrity reporter type, like almost like a
gossip reporter, really.
Yeah, and he made his name by telling embarrassing stories about like Hollywood celebs, right?
Yeah, he's been doing that for like 30 years.
Okay, what's the story with him?
So this week he went on a live on Instagram, TikTok live, mm-hmm. and it was for about 23 minutes long. He was not in a good place mentally. I don't think he ever has been, but he was actually going through a psychotic episode. Yeah, and he took a knife to his body in multiple places of his body and just started slicing himself. Apparently is something that you you should not seek out. It's not one of those where they say, you know, don't watch this to try and get you to watch it. Apparently it is deeply, deeply disturbing. He really does maim himself all over. And
He did this live? He did this on a stream?
Yes.
Oh, for God's sake.
I stand to be corrected whether it was Instagram or TikTok, but whoever it was eventually closed it down after 23 minutes. He was absolutely covered in blood from head to toe. He was maiming his genitals. He was really, apparently it was absolutely brutal. I've seen snippets of where the emergency services have arrived at his home. He is currently in hospital. He did survive. But apparently recently there was something to do with an infection he had and some sort of sepsis. And I don't know if that set off a psychotic episode, but obviously lots of rumors swirling around. And then a lot of people saying, you know, when you've ruined the lives of others for 30 years, you deserve this. Other people saying no one deserves this. And there's all of that going on. But yeah, that's quite the story of fame and getting to the point of doing something like that.
Yeah, you know, there's something about if you're going through shit, it doesn't need to be shared. Like some privacy, some dignity here. And I know he's probably going through a mental breakdown, so he wasn't thinking clearly. He wasn't in his best mind. I feel like this is all symptomatic of attention seeking. That's why you would stream it live and then hurt yourself on a stream. And that's what people do if they're crying out for attention, not for help. They want sympathy, but they're more interested in the attention they get for the problem, rather than
yeah.
I mean, no one's really going to come and help you. No one's coming to your house to rescue you, right? They're just watching you go through your shit.
The chances are better of someone coming to help to rescue you because that someone's going to report it as opposed to you doing it by yourself with no one watching. I think the intention right there is completely different to whether he had done that by himself. And at what level would he have stopped?
Well, Carl DeSantis says what I'm thinking. You know you're annoying when you try to stab yourself.
You see, never too early, never too soon.
Yeah, I love it. Mo Rabbit says, I saw the video, but you could only watch 5 seconds. Yeah, I had this argument with my sister a little while ago. She watches, like I know you do, all those crime shows and these shows where they catch like these serial killers. And you know I have no interest in those true life dramas and real and crime stories and even horror movies. Horror and thriller movies, I'm just not that interested in. And I suppose it's because there's enough going on in the world that's ugly that I don't want to see more. So I just cut it out. I would never go and watch this Perez Hilton video. I would never go and look at it. I'm just so not interested.
I don't want to. I mean, I'm into true crime and all of that, but I don't want to watch this.
Clint from the Vol says, so extreme attention seeking. 7 years' time, he'll be back with a book and they'll all be praising his bravery. Lame, not interesting. Yeah, I think that's true.
I don't think he would ever write a book. I don't think his audience are book readers. They're more like gossip headlines and maybe a paragraph. But he'll be back.
Well, you know, this also happens from the point of view that sometimes the reporter wants to become the story. We've seen this with journalists before where they start making the story about them. And maybe Perez Hilton, and just put that photo of him up again. I mean, a guy like it looks like that, he's never going to become a star. Jesus. What an ugly human being. I mean, really, and that's him like dressed up. You can see he's going to some awards show or something with that horrible jacket on. But that guy, he should never have been famous in the first place. He carved out a niche for himself talking about other famous people. He should have stuck to that. He shouldn't have become the star.
I mean, as much as he spoke ill of others for 30 years. He was bullied for 30 years by the people saying
so what?
He was ugly, was this, he was that.
Come on. There's, you know, let so me tell you, we need to, angles. Leanne, we need to bring back bullying. People are so soft and pathetic these days. A little bit of bullying would help a lot of people to just toughen the fuck up. I've seen so much in the last couple of months of like men who just are whiny little bitches, men who complain about their feelings, men who are supposed to be doing shit and looking after stuff and being providers, just these pathetic males who are soft and weak and useless. Like there's nothing more sad than a useless man. And I see them and I think you should have been bullied more.
Yeah, it's definitely still around. I don't know. I still find myself in a situation where I'm being bullied at least twice a month, a good session of bullying. But
your cats have always done that to you. So
I've just been bitten by one of them. Well, the one.
See, I know. I know this happens. Oh, man. All right. Listen, we've got a couple of things to do. I'm going to also bring in Maria, who's been on the show before. Maria is from Tourvest, and she's going to tell us about some exciting new stuff as well. We're going to get to that in just a moment or two. Roger Rax, as I mentioned, Maria Watkins, by the way, in case you were wondering what her surname was. Roger Rax coming on later. And then, Leanne, before you go, we have to play a quick game of Dead or Alive. Because we haven't done that in ages. I'll give you a bunch of celebrity names. I'm going to add Perez Hilton because who knows, right?
He's a risk to himself.
Could be a risk. So we'll get to him later. But stick around for that and a whole lot more. So let's go to Maria quickly. And you'll remember Maria was on the show not too long ago. But she has just got back. And you're going to love this, Leanne. I want to go to this place so badly. She is going to tell us about her once-in-a-lifetime trip to experience the polar lights, the northern lights up in Norway. Norway, the place I want to go. So wow. What a perfect day to bring on Maria. So how's it, Maria Watkins? How are you doing? Bring her on, James. Where is she? There she is. Ah, hello.
How's it? How are you?
I'm lucky. It's nice to see you.
Yeah, oh,
good. Happy Friday morning.
Happy Friday, and I come to speak to you about something a little sunnier and happier than what you've been speaking about.
What, Perez Hilton? Anything sunnier and happier than Perez Hilton. But listen, I'm not joking. Norway is probably, I mean, if I have to rank the places I really want to go, Norway is probably in the top three, hey?
It's an absolutely gorgeous country. I mean, Gareth, you know, I've done quite a bit of traveling up. Been quite privileged to do that.
And, yeah, you've been everywhere.
Norway is probably one of the prettiest destinations I've been to, purely because it's just so much water, so much nature. And, you know, I know you mentioned the Northern Lights, but I wasn't quite there for the season. The Northern Lights are more from November to March. Okay. I went there now in June and in the summer, but it was pretty much the same weather we were having back home in our winter. Wow. But what I did experience was something they call the midnight sun. So it never gets dark. It just never gets dark. So the sun does set. You do watch the sunset, but it just stays as bright and light as it is right now for us. And it doesn't matter if you're out at 6 p.m. in the evening or if you're making your way back from a club at 3 a.m., it feels like daylight. But it's a strange experience because your body is like feeling like it's daytime, but you know you should be sleeping because the next day you want to, you know, go out and explore the country. But the hotels are very well equipped. I mean, they've got all of those blackout curtains. Blackout. So you are able, yeah, if you drag yourself into your hotel, you're able to actually get a good night's sleep. We went to two places, Bergen and Oslo, both completely different, both absolutely gorgeous. Bergen is known as the rainiest city in Europe. They get rain around 240 days of the year. So you got to pack your umbrella, you got to pack your raincoats. If you forget to do that, I mean, they've got stores that run a living from selling umbrellas. That's it. That's all you'll find in that shop. But the rain doesn't get you down. It doesn't get you down.
I mean, you mentioned how beautiful it is, and you've got the fjords, and you've got incredible infrastructure there, these bridges and roads that are just beautifully designed through the mountains, over the fjords, just incredible stuff. And I have a friend, and he and his wife went to Norway. They went on the Hurdigurden, which is that it's the little boat that you hop on, and it takes you all the way up the coast to wherever you want to go. I think they went all the way up to the Arctic Circle, and it just feels like a magical place from what he described. It seems to me that it's so different to what we've got here. You know, South Africa, we think of the bush and we think of the beach. And I was talking to Ben just last week about the mountains, but in Norway, it's such a funny, you mentioned the midnight sun and, you know, the fact that obviously in winter it's dark the whole time, but it's just such a magical place by the sound of things. That's where trolls and fairies and all that stuff comes from.
Correct. And we went on beautiful fjord cruises. I mean, when you're actually cruising on that water, it is so clear, it is so calm, and those cliffs just engulf you. You just feel surrounded. Waterfalls like I have never seen in my lifetime. I mean, we have some beautiful waterfalls in our own country, but they were massive. They were powerful. What is lovely to also see is just how the people of Norway live. They're very sporty. So like one of our tour guides said, anything ending with an ing, they do. You know, it's hiking, it's kayaking, it's running, it's swimming. They get into their camper vans and their RVs and they, you know, drive around. You're able to park your RV wherever, as long as it's not within somebody's personal property. So you see these camper vans and RVs everywhere, and I think what an incredible way to experience that country. We were on boats. We were on a vintage train, the Flumsbana. I'm sure your friends experienced that. You get to Flum, a beautiful, beautiful village, and then you get onto this vintage train, and along the way they actually stop for you to get off for like 5 minutes, and you go to one of these incredible waterfalls, and they have this mystical fairy that apparently used to entice the men into the forests. And they have a human woman that comes out and dances and then disappears. And, you know, it's just so incredible to experience.
You know what's amazing about Norway is that's probably her full-time job. That's all she does.
She
comes out
does.
And dances under the... Listen, I'm a sucker for a waterfall, hey? I mean, I love...
Gorgeous.
A waterfall is... To me, I could sit there mesmerized for hours at a waterfall, like a dumb Labrador. I just look at those things. And then you bring in, like, Norwegian women. And, I mean, I've seen...
Oh, they're beautiful.
Oh, my God. I follow this Norwegian pole vaulter who I swear to God... Just if you promised me that I could just see her in real life, I would learn Norwegian. I would get my visa. I'd live in a fucking camper van for 6 weeks if I had to, just to like bump into her in the shops. I mean, what a special place.
It is a special place. And even though the
Erling Haaland at the moment.
What's that? You would want to meet Erling Haaland.
Yeah, that's how women are feeling about him at the moment, I think.
Yeah.
I would love to know what percentage of new visitors to Norway are purely because of an interest player, because the whole of America has now woken up to the fact that there's something beyond their own sport and an entire world out there with players who are followed by millions of people. So, yeah, that would be interesting to know.
Limited Edition asks what language is spoken. It's Norwegian, and Norwegian is different to Swedish, is different to Finnish, is different to Danish, and is different to Icelandic. But they can kind of understand each other. They all have similar roots. But
it's almost like a bit of a dialect.
Could you understand any of it?
Not at all. You can't even read it, really. But I must say, the people of Norway, they're very friendly, even though there is a bit of a language barrier. They do make the effort to try and communicate. You know, the food in Norway as well, Gareth, something, it's obviously a lot of seafood, but we experience some incredible restaurants. There's a place called Skyskrapen. It's about 640 meters above sea level. You get up there and by cable car, and you get the most magnificent views. Unfortunately, it was raining the day we went, but the food was really, really great. Another recommendation would be the Cornelius restaurant. It's a very famous restaurant. You can only get there by boat from Bergen. And when you arrive there, you actually don't know what's on the menu because it's caught fresh every single day. And the owner, who is well over 75 years old, still dives himself to get some of the seafood that you experience in that restaurant. So really, really special. We visited Oslo as well. It's a city, but so clean. A lot of fun, a lot of shopping. They've got a beautiful sculpture park that's open to the public 24/7. So you see a lot of the locals running through that park. But the sculptures are just so impressive. It's all human sculptures. And it really depicts this artist's lifetime. Really, really great. Something fun we did was, I don't know if you know what a rib boat is. I didn't. So it's almost like an extra large rubber boat, but it's sort of got those seats that you're standing and slightly sitting, but not quite. And you get out there onto the water in the fjords of Oslo, and you're going at a speed. And it's just so much fun. Go Google it, rib boats in Oslo. I'm not the adventurous type, so I was quite nervous about it. I had an absolute blast. Something fun to do. Well over my 50s too, and for the first time in my life, I got thrown out of a club in Oslo. So that's a story for another time. But I want to mention
hang on, no, you're not getting away with this. No nonsense. What did you do to get thrown out of? No, Maria, what did you do? Come on. What did you do?
It was pretty innocent. They're a very organized country. You can only imagine. I mean, it is so brilliantly run, that country. So even in the pubs, you get a time slot for a table. I mean, we're from South Africa. You walk into a pub, if the table's available, you sit. And so we did. We got served. We ordered food. And then the people who actually booked the table arrived. And as South Africans, we couldn't quite understand what the problem is. And so we just carried on sitting until the bouncers came to remove us. But great night.
They didn't offer you another table. They just kicked you out of the club.
Yeah. But it came down to, I think, a little bit of a communication barrier. And, you know, South Africans being South Africans, we were just having a lack of joy, not really paying attention to the demands that were coming through to vacate the table. So we got thrown out. So it was pretty innocent, nothing raucous, nothing you probably ran through your mind in that split second. But I wanted to mention the clubs, the pubs, really fantastic. But you got to be prepared to pay 300 rand for a local beer in a pub. I'm a Guinness drinker, 545 rand for a Guinness.
Wow.
So they use the krona in Norway. And as much as the exchange rate sounds pretty acceptable at 1.7, it is quite pricey and it is expensive, but worth every penny, really. That's exactly what you see constantly. Just an amazing experience. I would recommend it to anybody that, you know, is keen to visit those kind of countries. Easy to get there. Most of the European airlines have got a connection through to Norway. We went via KLM, via Amsterdam, but very easy to get to. Really just an incredible place.
You know, it's always kind of struck me as a little, it's different to the other Scandinavian countries in that, first of all, they use the krona, not the euro. Norway's not in the EU. They have an enormous sovereign wealth fund because they drill for oil off in the North Sea, and they're a country that can afford to spend lavishly on social, you know, social welfare, on infrastructure. It's a very well-provisioned country, and obviously, you know, they look after things there. They build constantly. They've got free schools and free healthcare for the people who live there. It's also expensive, as you already pointed out, for tourists. But the density of population is not that high. So wherever you go, most of what you're seeing is kind of unspoiled nature. Obviously, in the cities, correct, it's different. But there's vast expanses of Norway that nobody lives in.
Absolutely. It is. And you know, you mentioned earlier as well, I mean, you can drive for hours and not see somebody. They have the infrastructure, the tunnels. We drove through a tunnel that was about 20 kilometers long. And within the tunnel, though, they've got all of these flashing lights, not disturbing, like they keep changing color so that the drivers don't get this tunnel vision. But they've created this infrastructure for the people to move around quite easily. And, you know, as a Norwegian, you're never going to suffer. When you retire, you're well looked after through that fund. You're never, ever going to suffer. So everybody that we sort of experience in the workspace definitely works really, really hard. Everyone's there. Everyone's looking after their country. It's so clean, like unbelievably clean. And then you just throw in all of this water that's around you, and you feel like you are really in a magical place. You know, they even something interesting that I've never seen before that I think we need here is the driver cannot start his bus unless he takes a breathalyzer test. That is the only way the bus will start up. So
that's no fun.
Yeah, I
no
mean,
fun
it's
at all.
Very safe.
I mean, in South Africa, South Africa, you take your chances with taxis and bus drivers. You never know; they could be drunk.
Well, you
and
know, the difference is you could walk around there really freely. I mean, besides the fact that while we were there, it was light, so you never feel like you're walking down a dark alley ever. It's really safe. It is very, very safe, even in the big city, even in Oslo.
Well, it was. Listen, you've just put the cherry on the top here. You gilded the lily. You've iced the cake, because for me, it's always been in my top destinations, and now I'm absolutely bursting to go. But how incredible! How long were you there for?
We were there just over a week.
Oh.
Just over a week.
Okay, your absolute highlight?
The waterfalls and the fjords.
Gotcha.
The waterfalls and the fjords were just absolutely incredible.
I love it. All right, Maria, you've done
it
again.
You know who can take you there? You know who can take you there?
Yeah. there's one other thing. You went to Svalbard. Svalbard is where they've got the World Seed Bank. So they've collected seeds from all over the world, and they've got this incredible underground archive. It's one of the most secure places on planet Earth. You need huge security clearances to get in there. And they've stored every kind of mostly sort of edible plants and medicinal plants that they've gathered from all over the world. So that if there's some kind of disaster and a plant gets wiped out or worse, they can go to the seed bank and they can grow some of those plants from scratch, which is an incredible thing. I don't think you got to see the seed bank, but that's one of the things I know happens in Svalbard.
Yeah.
Obviously, going in winter, and a lot of people would want to go in winter. You get to see the northern lights, and of course, then it's dark instead of light the whole time. This is it's a place you can visit all year round, right?
All year round, absolutely. And I'll work really hard to get to go there at a time when I can experience the Northern Lights. Sure. You know, a colleague of mine was there over the December period, and he was showing me his photographs, and it's unbelievable. And you see it every night. It's not like it's not like a myth that, you know, you may or may never see. It happens over that time, practically every night, and it's incredible. If you've ever watched a video of the Northern Lights, it's exactly like that.
Amazing. All right, Maria, I love it. Thank you for making our mornings a little bit more exciting than usual.
Gareth, thank you.
Always good to see you. Thanks, Maria.
Likewise. Cheers.
Very cool. Bye. There we go. It's Maria Watkins. She is from she's the GM for leisure at Tourvest. And, you know, the best place to go if you want to book something like this is go to travel.co.za. They're offering all kinds of cool stuff. And you heard last week from Ben, who told us about their big golf trip to Mauritius. So if you want to go along to that, you can also go and book. What would your top three travel destinations be, Ass? Anywhere in the world, as long as you want. Three tickets. What are your three destinations?
Definitely one of the Scandinavian countries. And now, think, you know, obviously after this conversation, it's particularly inspiring to go there. I would love to revisit the coast of Spain again, and Barcelona. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think of like a third place.
Well, Prof David Block was on last week. He's going to Egypt for the solar eclipse next year. And I think that could be an extraordinary thing to see. I'm almost thinking it might be a nice birthday present to myself to go and join Professor David Block looking up at the solar eclipse when I turn 50. What a great occasion that would be. I'd love it. So I think I might just take him up on that.
Yeah, I mean, well, going with the prof would make it an extraordinary experience in itself. That would be amazing. Yeah.
Oh, that's 9/10 of the fun. Mm-hmm. I said to him, I was thinking about this. I might like to go. And he said, oh, that'll be wonderful. Then I suggested, well, I could put together like a little history lecture thing. I mean, I would pay and go as a guest, but I'd put together a little history lecture on Egypt. And he's like, we don't need you. He goes, I'll get a proper Egyptologist. He like put me in my place immediately. He's like, why don't you shut up and I'll get some people who actually know this stuff. I'm like, I was thinking, oh my God, I could have done this thing about the you know, the different pharaohs and the different dynasties in Egypt and the gods of ancient Egypt. He's like, shut up. What do you know? I'm going to get a proper expert.
Oh, there you go.
I'm sorry. I'll shut the hell up. Yeah.
Take your Aesop's fables elsewhere.
Yeah, he put me right in my place. It was unbelievable. China never comes up as a holiday destination. Interesting, says Vili. Well, I know people who've been to China, and I think it is fascinating. I mean, Hong Kong is often a tourist destination, and many people have that on their lists high up. And China's amazing. There are places there and huge towns that make the entire population of South Africa could fit into them. They make us look like we're small fry. And I think from the point of view of seeing what kind of amazing stuff they're doing, China could be a really good place to go. Jean says in the comments here, Jean Bobayan says, I'm leaving for Egypt tomorrow. Nice.